Hi, welcome to episode 2 of the Impact Africa podcast by Faith Flows, the season 2. Vanessa Richard is my name and I'm the host. Okay, the conversation on this episode is going to be explosive and eye-opener for you. Want to know what I mean? Join me. All right, I am so excited to have joining me on this episode of the podcast, Blessing Abeng. There's just so much to say about her, but I think her works actually speak for her. And that's why I like to stick with the name, A Gladiator on Heels. I saw that and I was like, oh my God, yeah. So Blessing is a branding and communications expert who is dedicated to helping entrepreneurs identify their values and unique point of view. She's equally the director of communications at Ingressive for Good, a nonprofit organization passionate about empowering young Africans in tech through learning and the power of work. A lot of things to say about her, but I think I'll allow the conversation to unfold for you to get to know more about the woman I'm talking about, okay? It's my pleasure to have you on this podcast, Blessing.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for inviting me. I'm happy to be here.
Thank you. Okay, so let's start talking. Our conversation today will focus or centered on how to build and sustain a successful startup. And knowing full well that you have worked with several global brands and you are still working with them, you're in the best position to tell us what goes on in the minds of these brands. Right. Okay. For someone who wants to set up a startup, considering establishing a startup in any industry or sector, because you can actually do that, what are some of the cardinal things to put in place to consider before you venture into that project?
This is actually an apt topic because I love startups. I've worked with lots of startups. For a period, I even was co-director of a startup grind at Lagos. So it's such a, I'm so happy, you know, because I love startups. And every once in a while, I find myself going back there to sort of help support and be part of their journey. One of the things that I have noticed, or a few things that I've noticed in working with both startups and multinationals or generational businesses, the very first thing is you have to define what kind of business you want to build. Different people have different goals for building businesses. For some people, it's just, I want to have money to eat every day. But for some people, it's, I want to build something that has the power to change the world or impact the world. And I want to pass this on to my kids. So first, what kind of startup do you want to build? Because the type of startup you want to build would then affect the kind of processes and structure you will build around the business. So define first the startup that you want to build. Next, you want to know exactly what problem you're solving, but you also want to know exactly who you're solving that problem for. A big thing I see people do is say, you know, my target market is everybody. And once I hear that, it just breaks my heart because it means you're going to be talking to everyone and then no one would be listening. Nobody wants to be called everyone. Nobody wants to be seen as everyone. Nobody wants to feel like they're just another crowd, you know, one generic crowd that you're talking to. Everybody wants to be respected and seen as an individual for who they are, right? So if you, any startup, any business that can come to them and say, I know your problem and this is how to solve it, you're more likely to see results than if the person was just talking to like generic, to like everybody, right? And so understanding who you're talking to and their problems and knowing how the solutions that you have created can help make them better or make their lives better is such a great foundation for any business, really, any business at all. I mean, I could go on and on. There's so many things. You have to do research. I think beyond just knowing your audience, you need to really know them, like ask them questions. Don't just throw out surveys and just assume that based on the surveys, they're going to tell you what they need. It's a lie. People answer surveys thinking about their best possible self, not who they really are. So you want to be able to have conversations and sort of research and dig deep into what motivates these people. Who are they? What do they like? What are they gravitating towards now? But you also want to do research about the markets. Have they experienced any new change? Have they experienced any innovation in recent years? Have they walked away from brands that are doing things that you're doing now? Why did they walk away from those brands? Why are they gravitating towards a particular brand? But you know, you want to ask those deep questions. And I really hope that I'm not saying too much so that people don't feel overwhelmed. It's really not that difficult. You just need to know the points you're looking for, the key things that you're looking for, and ask questions in line with that. And then know your industry. You need to know the players in the industry, your competitors, the strengths you have, the weaknesses you have. And you're not doing this to just compare yourself. yourself, and then every time you'll be looking at this people and like, oh, what is Vanessa doing today? Oh God, Vanessa just launched a podcast. Now I too have to launch a new podcast. No, you just want to know exactly what is happening in the industry, what are your opportunities are. And once you figured all those things out, what market share you currently have and the market share you're going for, you can then go back focusing on your customer in a way that you're leveraging the opportunities and strengths that you realize that you had, and focusing 100% on your customer. Then once every year, you can look back and say, okay, for the last 1 year, we focused on our customer, see what's going on in the industry again. So that's why I push heavily more for collaboration over competition. But I'll stop here because that's such a pregnant question. I could talk about this all day.
Breathe, feel, live, love, learn, grow in faith, and make an impact. Introducing the new faithflows.org app. A new kind of social network that is dedicated towards uplifting the well-being of individuals and communities around the world. Connect, pray, learn new skills, teach, inspire others, listen to Faith Radio, and volunteer for humanitarian missions. People all over the globe are connecting on the new positive social media app. Are you on Faith Flows? Download the Faith Flows app today and start living your best life now.
Do I need to get an MBA before I create a startup for myself?
At all, no. In fact, funny enough, I read an article this week that was about the people deciding not to invest in startups or not to hire MBA people for their startups. And then they're being careful to, you know, invest in MBA guys as well. Not because there's anything wrong with them. It's just that they were really thought the ideal world, you know, and the ideal world isn't always, you know, the reality. And so people are more prone to people who have an experience, who have worked with brands and just like, you know, had the experience of building or are really passionate or have even dropped out and are just passionate about this one thing, about this one change that they want to make. So having an MBA or not having an MBA doesn't really matter as much. As long as you are a lifelong learner, the kind of person who is interested in learning, right? You just care about learning, care about improving yourself, care about solving problems. It doesn't matter. I'm not saying MBA people are bad, though. Like, I need to just sort of reiterate, they're not. It's just I read an article. I'm not saying that the article is right either, but I'm saying the people who believe that your MBA might be limiting you, right? And it's okay for you to have an MBA and build a great business. It's also okay for you to not have an MBA and build a great business. You just have to know what you care about. You just have to know enough about the product you're building and about the people that you're building it for. You also have to be committed to lifelong learning. You need to understand process structures. And in places where you know you can't, you know, perform, like maybe this is something you're not really interested in learning, or you'd rather use your time focused on something else, you can hire people or recruit co-founders that are going to handle those parts of your business for you, right? A good example was when someone approached me last year. He had built an amazing product and he said, listen, I know that I'm great at design. I know that my other co-founder is great at tech. That's why I brought him. He built such an amazing tech platform. Now, what we also know we are both not good at is marketing. So come and help us with marketing and you'll be a co-founder as well. And so the three of us coming together was like rocket. You know, it was like firework. Because right immediately after we came together, there was this spark. It was like some catalyzing reaction had happened, and next thing, we're just exploding. The business grew at a very fast rate. So understand what your loopholes are, understand what you don't know, understand what you know, and then don't be scared to ask for help. Understand structures, build processes that can outlive you, and treat your people well. You don't need an MBA to treat people well.
Thank you. Now, I know that every industry comes with its own challenges, unique or peculiar, and you can't take it away from it, right? So what are some of these challenges to bear in mind that will come up even when you think you have done your background work, you have a great idea, a product or service to render? What are some of these challenges to take into consideration?
You know, not that the business itself is going to fail, but you're going to experience little failures, like tiny failures in little quantities. It might be you tried something, it didn't work out, or you hired somebody, it didn't work out. Something would not work out. Or the government might just turn against you and come up with some policy. Dollar might just increase versus the naira, or even pounds might just increase versus the naira. naira, or you know, you never know, something will just happen, the crypto market might just fall, you just know, but something is not going to go your way and you're going to experience little bouts of failure, and it's okay. You know, just knowing the difference between like failing a project versus being a failure, and so what can I do to get it right next time, right? So if you were trying to wash plates, for example, sorry, I like to use analogies, but if you're trying to wash plates, for example, and plates slip from your hand and broke, you don't start crying and say, oh, I'm a failure because I broke plates. In every business, you're always going to need people. And so you would need to be able to hire the right type of people. And I would say maybe be quick to fire when you notice like people aren't, especially as a startup, because you don't have enough money how do I say this in a nice way? You don't have enough money to just keep investing in a person.
Invest in the wrong people?
Yes, in the wrong people. Yes, you don't have enough money. And so you can't keep giving third, fourth chances if they keep bailing and dropping. It's not that they are bad, really. And it's not that they're bad. It's just that they're wrong for your business. And you need to be able to do the godly thing and let them go, so that they can also succeed by finding the right place where they have the ability to fly. So don't feel bad when you fire. What you're really doing is leasing people to go find where they really fit in this world, as opposed to sending them in your cage where they don't feel like they're wanted. That's how it feels when the wrong people work in the wrong businesses. It's almost like a cage for them, and it's also like a cage. Both of you are torturing each other. So also surround yourself with the right people as well, as in your inner circle, your advisors, mentors, people who can, you know, talk to you and help you make better decisions, because you're going to be in places where you would have to make opportunity type of decisions, where you have to decide if you're going to focus on something or if you're going to quit it. You're going to decide, is it working or is it not? Do we keep it? Do we cut it? You're going to be at different crossroads like that at different times. You also want to keep your books. You know, people don't keep their books. People don't know the difference between their personal accounts and their business accounts. Don't be one of those people. Do your things. Keep books. When you can't, you know, hire someone to do it for you. They don't even cost that much, because they're now businesses for this as their service to startups. When you're desperate, you're hungry, you're a ginger, you want to just make money, you want to just get your business out there, and you're willing to go the extra mile. You're also young and fragile, and big up Shark, and investors know this. Have a lawyer to protect
you. Have your own lawyer to protect you. Yes. Okay.
Okay. And then I think the last thing after that was, don't be swayed by money when you're investors. Money sounds good, but it's not enough. You need to have investors who understand your vision, who understand the mission, who understand what you're building, who have synergy with your brand, who also share your values. That way, you wouldn't be in a situation where they're trying to change your business just for money. Instead, they would do it with empathy, do it with understanding of the core value. Because when you bring an investor into your business, you're giving them the right to be part of decision making. You're saying, whatever you tell me to do, I am willing to listen. And if those investors are a lot, especially if they're the ones who give you a lot of money and you have to give them updates, investors expect their money back. But some investors, more than others, would push you to the wall to get their money back. They put unnecessary and undue pressure on you to get their money back. No matter what the push is, because you share values, they would never push you out of those values while trying to make that money back. And that may not sound like a lot now, but it's actually a very priceless thing. So try to find investors who share values with you and understand your mission and the thing that you're building. The last thing I was going to add was, like, don't take more money than you need. Some people get carried away and then they overcapitalize, as in they take so much more money, they ask for way more money than they need. And so they put pressure on themselves. So if your series, in fact, if your pre-seed was like $1 million, the pressure is, for Series A, you're going to have to raise way more than $1 million. And so if you cannot prove that your business was worth $1 million in the first place by either hitting revenues or hitting numbers and things like that, you would you'll be in a bad situation, because then you can't meet up the second time. So you've literally just drowned your business and put yourself in a place where you've devalued your business by taking way too much money than you need. So just take the money that you need. And even if investors offer you more than you say you need, feel free to always like say, these are the projections, these are the things we need the money for, and we don't want to take more than that. It's hard to say no to money, but it can be a good thing. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Would you say that Africa is providing that enabling environment for startups to thrive? Because every business, startups particularly, want to be accepted, want to know that this market is conducive for them to actually thrived. Will you say that Africa is providing that enabling market and environment for these startups?
Yes and no. It depends on perspective, really. Yes, in the terms of Africa is populated, you know, we have a lot of people, and with a lot of people, we also have a lot of problems. And so there's so many opportunities. There are lots of potential solutions that people can profit off from. And then we also have the large number of people that can buy, right? And we have the different classes of people present as well. We have the rich, we have the poor, we have the middle class, we have all this like distribution. We also have similar problems across different countries. So it's also a fund. However, governance makes it little tricky, right? Because for some countries, they're pro-citizens and some other countries are anti-their citizens. And so they would create policies that sort of stifle their citizens as opposed to policies that are their citizens. Some countries are also not willing to partner with their businesses to create a better environment for them to work. Some countries are also not going to help their citizens and businesses of the citizens sort of progress outside of the continent because there's, you know, because there isn't, most times they don't have good reason, you know, and they look at some opportunities and there is fear because of maybe again, the age of the people in governance, there is some sort of fear that they're being touched. And so they're quick to ban crypto, quick to ban Twitter, quick to ban everything bannable. They just ban without necessarily understanding because they're not even seeking to understand. So there's all that, and it can be difficult. There's also heavy cost of transportation. If you've ever tried to travel within Africa, it costs you almost the same to travel outside of Africa. And sometimes when you wait, it's just better, you know, travel abroad. So cost of transportation, cost of transporting things within African countries, even within countries itself, it's crazy. And it then increases the cost of doing business. Our reputation is also not that great. So some global people do not want to do businesses with some Africans. The barrier to entry is so much more difficult. But somehow, Africans have tried to be there for themselves. We're getting African investors investing in African businesses. We've gotten some African VCs try to get money, Silicon Valley money, and bring it to Africa. We've gotten opportunities where now people are beginning to recognize Africa. As long as you solve a problem, irrespective of the challenges, you know, there will always be a way out. There will always be people rooting for you, and there will always be people willing to buy as long as you solve a problem. So I would say, again, yes, it gives a great environment for people to thrive because then, you know, that raw hunger to succeed. But there is also your government not necessarily helping, you know, and so that can be very crippling as well. So yes and no. I hope that answers it.
Yes, it does. Thank you for that. Right. There's another question I want to ask here. At what point should someone, for instance, if the startup is not working, at what point should you consider quitting, fold it up, move on to something else?
I only advocate for quitting when you're sure and convinced about your reason for quitting. And pro-quit when you know you're not going to be prone to regret, right? So for you to not be prone to, you sort of need to have done everything you feel like you possibly can. You need to have done your best. You need to have put in as much effort as you possibly can and literally left no stone unturned. And if you've done all that and it still doesn't work out, I mean, it's okay to quit. Literally, you need to know what you're quitting. Don't just quit because you're tired. I mean, it's a valid reason, but it's also a reason that can put you at a point of regret. So you need to be sure as to why you're quitting, right? If you're quitting because it's just like an emotional decision, I don't support that. I feel don't ever make any decision in the middle of emotion. Sort of calm down, think through it, go through the processes, ask yourself questions. You can seek counsel if you want, but quitting is okay. Just be sure that you have left no stone unturned. If something is obviously not working, for example, there are other options before you even consider quitting. There's pivoting. Maybe you started the business for a reason and then you realize, oops, these people really don't need that thing I said after speaking to them. And then you realize there's this other opportunity, however, that they're interested in. You can pivot. You just take that business and sort of turn it into something else. I read about a spray that was supposed to be for, I think, was it P&G? It was a spray that was supposed to be for body odor, to sort of help control people's body odor. But people didn't like it for body odor. They didn't use it because they wanted to control body odor around them. Used it as some sort of reward for whenever they were done cleaning. So every time somebody finishes cleaning, they would spray that killer spray. And the owners of the brand did a lot of research and realized, oh, people are not using our products to control body odor like we created. People are now using it to, you know, reward themselves after cleaning. So let's push it as that. Same product, different message. And immediately it caught fire. Another example is Instagram. Instagram started off as a geolocator of some sort, like a check-in app. Like you get to a place and you check in that you are here. It wasn't supposed to be a place for posting of selfies and pictures and enjoyable moments and things like that. But the people realized what people were using it for. They were happy to rebrand and change it into that and see how big the business has grown into. So it's okay to rebrand, it's okay to pivot, it's also okay to leave it and go and do something if you feel like your heart is not in it. You should also feel comfortable sharing the idea with someone else. If you feel this is not something I want to pursue anymore, but I see someone who is better equipped, you either partner with that better equipped person to make it work, or you just dash them the idea and move on to something else. I hope that answers the question.
Yes, it definitely does, because most young persons are the ones going into startups. And sometimes when it seems it's not working, I'm not getting what I want to see, I think the next option for me is to just quit. So thank you for clarifying that. So quitting is not the first option to consider. You can actually rebrand, have a different message, maybe still maintain the initial product or service you want to render. But quitting should not be the first thing you consider. It should be the least when you've exhausted every other option, just like Blessing has said. All right, before I let you go, one of the themes you advocate for is storytelling, promoting your brand, true storytelling, telling your brand message. How best do I tell that great story that will capture the mind or the attention of the target audience, my client, or even investors?
This is such a pregnant question, because there isn't one way to tell your brand story. However, the most important factors you need to remember are it must be centered around your target audience. It shouldn't be about you. It should be about the target audience and you just being that guide that leads your target audience to becoming the superhero in their lives. I think that's the best way to put it. You're like the Andrew for Batman. You're not Batman, but you're the Andrew for Batman. Because if you even watch superhero films, you want to show how you're helping to empower them become superheroes in their lives. You're not the superhero. So if you find yourself telling a story where you're the hero, begin to question it. You also want to tell a story that is true. You want to tell a story that helps make people's lives better. A story that also makes a promise. So what brand story do I really like? There's so many brand stories, but just keep it true, to be honest. Keep it true. You don't need to lie to tell your story. You can just find something from your reality and tell that story. If you, for example, decided that you were going to start what business? You were going to start a tech business because you saw you want to start a new bank because you saw how difficult it was for your mom to bank and how she didn't have access to particular things because she was one of the unbanked. And then you found XYZ and you made it your life's mission to build that so that now other people who are unbanked can have access to things your mother didn't have access to. That is a strong story. So you don't have to make up stories. You don't have to fake it. Just reach deep into your heart and ask yourself, why did we start this thing? What inspired us to start this thing? Was it something I experienced? Was it something somebody else beside me experienced? And how do I tell people about this thing in a way that I make a promise to them and I keep it? How can I show them people that I have made this promise to and I kept it? How can I show them that this is about them? How do I mention the problems and then tell them the solution and how it works? Literally, that's what you're doing with this story. And stories work the same across every industry, in movies, in series, in real life. It starts with an identifiable person who should be your target audience. Then it moves on to maybe defined locations and, you know, why that person, which again reinforces that you know your audience. Then you want to share the problem. What is the challenge that happened? Why? How did the person feel like they had lost hope, or what situations were they in that they required the solution? And then next thing, you just swoop in and bring that solution and sort of bring that resolution that they need. Do you get what I mean? So that's the thing with storytelling. There is a main character, there is a problem, there is a solution, like there's some sort of resolution. And then there is literally a memorable moment, a memorable line. Don't make it too long. Just keep it short. Keep it simple. I mean, I can't even remember. Apple has like interesting stories around the different products that they have. Everything is literally a story, including the name. You want to just be interesting, but not lying. People think that you have to tell a story that lies. You don't have to. Just reach down deep. Think about things that are true. Make them based on insights and reality, stats, whatever, and just share that. You know, pick one person who is your real customer that has experienced your product and share that story. For Ingressive for Good, as you know, I work as a director of communications at Ingressive for Good. And one of the strongest stories that we tell every single person that cares to listen, I mean, I'm telling you now, there's a lady, she sold soap, liquid soap. She learned how to make and sell liquid soap to be able to make ends meet for her family. And then, and it was a family of six, as well as six children. So she had to figure it out. And then she stumbled on one of our programs and she took the program seriously. Her laptop gave up on her. The small laptop she was managing gave up on her. We found a way, we got her a laptop. And she was so diligent. She finished the program. All this while, she was still selling soap. She finished the program. After finishing the program, she went on and got a job in front-end development. It was a tech program. She did that program for just 3 months. Went on, got a job on front-end development. Now she's earning like 10 times the money she used to make while she was selling soap. And so when we share that story, we explain why our program is important, not because of us, but because these are the people that we want to help. It's a non-profit. These are the people we want to help. And I can hear somebody in their minds thinking, oh, non-profit is easy. But it's the hardest place to get money because you're not giving money back. You know, there's no promise of return. So think about things like that. And it's not just charity. Everybody who does a startup has a solution that is making someone's life better. Harness that story and tell it well.
I feel like you just told me a story right now and I'm buying into it. And that's wonderful. This is a whole lot. Thank you very much. It's amazing. All right. So before I finally let you off the hook, right, where do you see startups in Africa in the next 5 years? Are we going to make it? Do we have what it takes to survive?
Point. Survival is in Africa's DNA. So if it's a question of survival, for sure, we will always survive, you know. And with the expansion that is happening, we have unicorns now. We have unicorns from Africa. And yes, they're tech businesses, but I see it spreading. It started with music. Our music was like, I think, our first very maximum export that people knew about. It was the way people sort of felt like, oh, our musicians were strong. Because our music is business. So musicians were, you know, marketable, they were exportable. And that sort of blew us up in a very interesting way. I think Nollywood also did that. Now it's tech. Before you know what's happening, it might be fashion, it might be food. There's always something. And I don't see Africa as the continent that relents. So I definitely see us going places. I also see lots of governments clamping down hard on their African businesses. But I know some will die, some will survive, but we will always stand strong. We will always survive. That's just the amazing thing about Africa. There's so much potential. And there's so many great businesses popping up every single day, getting funding. I mean, millions of dollars. And now people who were funded and had gotten to a certain level are beginning to be invest in other new businesses. So nobody's waiting for the government to do anything. Everybody's taking responsibility for the continent. And I think that is beautiful. We also have a very high internet penetration rate. People are referring to us as an emerging market. And so many people are swooning in because here their money is worth way more than it's worth in Silicon Valley. So they're coming here to come and drop money so that they can get 100x, 10x, 20x returns. I think there is a wide opportunity and I hope startups can sort of position themselves so that they don't miss out on it.
Okay. Now, the future is indeed bright with everything you've said. And I want to say a very big thank you to you, Miss Apeng, for making our time to have this chat with me out of your busy schedule. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Okay, before I let you go, what do you have to say to Impact Africa? It's a production of Faith Flows. Faith Flows is actually a nonprofit organization based in the US, but has branches across several West African countries. And what we're actually doing is we're targeting young people and trying to empower them with what they need to actually become sufficient for themselves and also impact their communities.
I am so proud that you guys are doing this. I mean, with the way Africa is, we nonprofits always have to figure out how to be there for our people and just give them access to the resources, access to the people, access to the network, access to the information, all round access that they need. And you guys are doing an amazing job trying to do that. So thank you very much. And I really wish you guys the best. And I hope you can reach more and more people because this message that you're sharing needs to go farther than this. So I'm rooting for you and I'm happy that you're doing this. Keep up the good work.
Thank you again, Mrs. Abeng. This is a whole lot. And I know that now you listening to this podcast, you have gained so much value for yourself. So kindly do well to share with a friend, share with a startup owner, an intending startup owner, share with everyone around you, right? And this is big. It's an information for a lifetime, so don't hoard it. Impact Africa Podcast is a production of Faith Flows, so do well to connect with us on faithflows.org. And if you haven't listened to the episode 1 of the season 2, check it out on Spotify. Vanessa Richard is my name. I'll see you again on the next episode. Until then, have yourself a wonderful time. Bye for now.
Faith Flows is a nonprofit Christian organization. Support us today at faithflows.org/donate.